Round about his greatness there were indeed many houses and shrines at Karnak, for Ptah, the swaddled one, Min, the staring, Montu, the falcon, and some others had shrines there, and Amun tolerated the worship of them near him, and not only out of benevolence, for the multiplicity of the gods of Egypt was really an asset to his conservatism, always, of course, with the proviso that he, the weighty one, was king over them all, king of the gods, and that they waited upon him from time to time, in return for which he was ready, on proper occasion, to make them a return visit. But in this case there could be no waiting upon. There would be no image in the great new shrine and house of the sun, nothing but the obelisk, which threatened to be arrogantly tall. After all, it was no longer the time of the pyramid builders, when Amun was small and Re very great in his light places, when Amun had not yet taken Re into himself and become Amun Re, god of the empire and king of the gods. Among these, Re Atum now, for his part and in his kind, might of course continue to exist, or rather indeed should continue to exist, but not in any presumptuous sense, not as a new god called Aton, setting himself up to philosophize about himself. That was fitting for Amun-Re alone, or, more correctly, not even for him. To think, indeed, was altogether unsuitable, and the settled position was that Amun and no other was king over the traditional multiplicity of the gods of Egypt. But even under King Neb-Mare there had been a great deal of fashionable speculation at court, and now it looked as though it was going to take the upper hand. Young Pharaoh had given out an edict, and had it engraved on stone to commemorate the erection of the obelisk. It gave evidence of much subtilizing effort to define the nature of the sun god in a new and anti-traditional way, to define it so sharply, indeed, that it suffered from tortuosity. "There lives," so the inscription ran, "Re Hor of the horizon, who exults in the horizon in his name Shu, who is the Aton." That was obscure, although it dealt with light itself and was meant to be very clear. It was complicated, although it aimed at simplification and unification. Re Horakhte, a god among the gods of Egypt, had a threefold form: animal, human, and divine. His image was the image of a man with a falcon head, on which stood the disk of the sun. But also as a heavenly constellation he was threefold: in his birth out of the night, in the zenith of his manhood, and in his death in the west. He lived a life of birth, of dying, and of renewed generation, a life looking into death. But he who had ears to hear and eyes to read the writing on the stone understood that Pharaoh's doctrinal pronouncement did not wish the life of the god to be thus perceived as a coming and going, a becoming, passing, and becoming again, as a life done away with in death, and thus phallic. All in all, not as life, insofar as life is always done away with in death, but as pure being, the changeless source of light, subject to no ups and downs, out of whose image man and bird would at some far future time fall away, so that only the pure, life-radiating sun-disk remained, called Aton. This was understood, or not understood, but at least energetically and excitedly discussed by such as had the necessary equipment to talk about it, also by such as entirely lacked the equipment and merely prattled. It was prattled about even as far down as into Joseph's pit. Even my Sakme's soldiers prattled about it, and the convicts in the quarry, too, whenever they had breath enough. And this much, at least, everybody understood, that it was an offense to Amun-Re, as was likewise the great obelisk they had stuck in front of his nose, as well as certain more far-reaching orders of Pharaoh having to do with the subtilizing definition in the inscription, and really going very far indeed. Thus, the great estate where the new house of the sun grew up was to bear the name Brightness of the Great Aton. Yes, rumor even had it that Thebes itself, Wese, Amun's city, was henceforth to be called City of the Brightness of Aton. About this there was endless gossip. Even the dying in my Sakme's hospital beds talked of it with their latest breath, quite aside from those who were only suffering from itch or pink eye, so that the captain's rest-cure system was endangered. The Lord of the Sweet Breath, so it seemed, could not do enough to further his purposes and the purposes of the beloved God of his doctrine. In other words, the building of the temple. It was carried forwards with such haste and urgency that all the stonemasons from Jebu, the Elephant Isle, as far down as the Delta were set to work. And yet all this concentration failed to give the house of Aton the kind of structure suitable for an eternal dwelling. Pharaoh was in such haste, so ridden by impatience, that he gave up the use of the large blocks used for the tombs of the gods, because they were so hard to cut and haul. He gave order to erect the Temple of Changeless Light out of small stones, which could be tossed from hand to hand. Quantities of mortar and cement had thus to be used to smooth the walls for the painted bas-reliefs designed to shine there. Amun had made great fun of this, so one heard on all sides. So it was that the course of events reached down into Zawi Re and involved the son of Jacob, even though he was not present at them. For my Sakme's quarry had to furnish much stone for Pharaoh's hasty building, and Joseph had to be on hand with his overseer's staff to see that pick and crowbar were not idle, so that the governor of the prison should not get any flowery unpleasantness in his correspondence with the government. For the rest, he continued to endure his quite endurable punishment at Zawi Re by the side of his even-tempered chief. It was monotonous, like the captain's manner of speech, yet nourished by expectation, for there was much to expect, at hand and afar off, at first near at hand. Time passed for him as it does pass in the usual way, which we may call neither quickly nor slowly, for it goes slowly, especially when one lives in expectation, yet if one looks back, it appears to have gone very quickly. Joseph lived in Zawi Re until he got to be 30. Without taking particular notice of it. Then came the breathless day and the winged messenger, a day which might have startled my Sakme out of his calm and almost taught him to fear if he had not already been expecting great things for Joseph. The Express Messenger. A bark arrived with curving lotus prow and purple sail. It fairly flew up, so light it was, manned by 5 oarsmen on either side, and bearing the sign of royalty, an express boat from Pharaoh's own flotilla. It lay, too, neatly alongside the landing stage of Zawi Re, and a youth leaped ashore, slender and light as the boat that bore him, with lean face and long sinewy legs. His chest heaved beneath the linen garment. He was out of breath, or at least he seemed to be. He behaved as though he were. There was no real reason for breathlessness. After all, he had come by boat, not run all the way. Anyhow, he ran or flew with extreme celerity through the gate and courtyard of Zawi Re, opening a way for himself and preventing anyone from stopping him by uttering a series of little shouts, not loud, but very disconcerting to the astonished and ineffectual guards in his path, and demanding to see the captain at once. He ran then, or he flew, with such speed toward the citadel they pointed out to him, that despite his slim build, the pretended breathlessness might well have become real by the time he reached it. Certainly the little wings on the heels of his sandals and on his cap could not help him along. They were there merely in token of his office. Joseph, occupied in the counting-house, saw this new arrival running, but paid him no heed, even when his attention was called to him. He went on turning over papers with the chief clerk, until an underling came running, breathless too, with the order that Joseph was to drop everything, no matter how important, and present himself at once before the captain. "I am coming," said he, yet finished first the paper he was going over with the clerk. Then, of course, not loitering, but not running either, he betook himself to the captain in the tower. The end of my Sakme's nose was rather white when Joseph came into the dispensary. His heavy brows were drawn up higher than ever. His full lips parted. "Here you are," he said with a bated voice to Joseph. "You should have been here before. Hearken to this." He gestured toward the winged youth who stood beside him, or rather did not stand, or not still, for his arms, head, shoulders, and legs kept moving in such a way that he seemed to run to and fro without stopping, in order to go on being breathless. Sometimes he stood on his toes, as though about to take flight. "Your name is Usarsif?" he asked in a low, hurried voice, keeping his quick, close-lying eyes upon Joseph's face. "You are the captain's aide who was in charge of certain occupants of the Vulture House here 2 years ago?"
"I am," answered Joseph.
"Then you must come with me just as you are," the other stated, with even more speaking play of limb. "I am Pharaoh's first runner. His swift messenger am I, and came with the express boat. You must straightway join me, so that I can take you to court, for you are to stand before Pharaoh."
"I?" asked Joseph. "How could that be? I am too unimportant."
"Unimportant or no, it is Pharaoh's beautiful will and command. Breathless I bore it to your captain, and breathless must you obey the summons."
"I have been put into this prison," responded Joseph, "certainly by way of a mistake. And in a manner of speaking, I have been stolen down here. But here I am, a convict at hard labor. And though you cannot see my chains, yet I have them. How could I go out with you through these walls and gates onto your boat?"
"That has not the least thing in the world to do with it," hurried on the runner, "by comparison with the beautiful command, which makes all that vanish into thin air, and in a trice bursts all your bonds. Before Pharaoh's wonderful will, nothing can stand. But have no fear, it is more than unlikely that you will stand the test. Much more than likely they will bring you back in short order to the place of your punishment. You will hardly be wiser than Pharaoh's greatest scholars and magicians of the bookhouse, and shame the seers and soothsayers and interpreters of the house of Rey Horakhte, who invented the sun year."
"That is in God's hands, whether he is with me or not," answered Joseph. "Has Pharaoh dreamed?"
"You are not here to ask, but to answer," said the messenger. "And woe to you if you cannot. Then will you fall, I suppose, deeper than just back into this prison?"
"Why am I to be thus tested?" asked Joseph. "And how does Pharaoh know of me, that he sends forth his beautiful command down here to me?"
"You have been mentioned and named and called attention to in this crisis," the other replied. "On the way, you may learn more. Now you must follow me breathless, that you may straightway stand before Pharaoh."
"Waysay is far," said Joseph, "and far is Merimat the palace. However winged boat and messenger, Pharaoh must wait before his will is obeyed, and I stand before him for my test. He might even have forgotten his beautiful command before I come, and himself find it no longer beautiful."
"Pharaoh is near," responded the runner. "It pleases the beautiful sun of the world to shine now in On, at the point of the delta. He has betaken himself thither in the boat Star of the Two Lands. In a few hours my bark will fly and flit to its goal. Up with you, then, not a word more."
"But I must have my hair cut first and put on proper clothes if I am to stand before Pharaoh," said Joseph. He had been wearing his own hair in the prison, and his clothing was only of the very common, coarse linen. But the runner replied,
"That can be done on board as we flit and we fly. All has been provided. You imagine that one thing may delay another, instead of all being crowded into one time, in order to save it. But you know not what breathlessness is when Pharaoh commands."
So then Joseph turned to the captain to take his leave, and he called him my friend. "You see, my friend," said he, "how things stand, and how they are to go with me after these 3 years. They hurry me out of the pit, and draw me up out of the well. It is the old pattern. This courier thinks I shall come back down again to you, but I believe it not. And since I do not believe it, so will it not be. Fare thee well, and take all my thanks for the kindness and the peace which have made bearable this pause in my affairs, this penance and obscurity. For you have let me be your brother in the time of waiting. You were waiting for Nekbet's third appearance, and I was waiting upon my own business. Farewell. But not for long. Someone has thought of me after long forgetfulness, when he stubbed his toe against the memory of me. But I will think of you without forgetting, and if the God of my father is with me, whereof, not to offend him, I do not doubt, then you too shall be drawn up out of this tedious hole. There are three beautiful things, and 3 beautiful tokens which your servant cherishes in his heart. They are called Snatching Away, Lifting Up, and Making to Come After. If God lift up my head, and I should fear to insult him if I did not certainly expect it, then I promise you, you shall come after, and have a share in more stimulating circumstances than these, where your tranquillity will not be in danger of degenerating into sleepiness, and where the prospects for the 3rd incarnation will be improved. Shall that be a promise betwixt thee and me? Thanks, in any case, said my Satme, and embraced him, a thing which up till now he could not have done, and which, he vaguely felt, he would not be able to do later either, on opposite grounds. Only just now, at the moment of parting, was the right time. For a minute, said he, I thought I was quite upset when this man arrived, hot foot. But I am not. My heart beats evenly as ever. For how shall a thing one has been long expecting upset one? Calmness means nothing but that a man is prepared for every event, and when it comes, he is not surprised. But with feeling, it is different. There is room for it even with self-control, and it touches me very much that you will think of me when you come into your kingdom. The wisdom of the Lord of Khnum be with you. Farewell.